Chair, call the meeting to order. Should I get a copy? Kira, can I get a copy of the agenda?
Oh, yeah.
Hi, thanks for being here this evening. Roll call.
Citizen Member English.
Here.
Council Member Reed.
Here.
Council Member Matthews. Supervisor, we should note that Cynthia is eating, but she's here. Thank you. Supervisor Friend.
Here.
Supervisor McPherson.
Here.
Council Member Terrazas.
Here.
Council Member Termini.
Here.
Citizen Member Gert.
Here.
Citizen Member Dexter.
Here.
All right, thank you. So the next item on the agenda is approval of the agenda for March 18th. May I have a motion?
Motion approved. So, second.
Okay. Motion by Council Member Termini, second by Supervisor McPherson. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Passes unanimously. Okay, the next item on the agenda is public comment. And we put this here, this is a single item meeting where we're going to be hearing a presentation. It's a study session on the Library Facilities Master Plan. But as the custom, we'd like to have any public comments to open up for items that are not on the agenda at this time. Is there anyone who wishes to make any public comment? Sir, you have 2 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, hi. Resident here of downtown Santa Cruz. My name is Michael Becker, and I just wanted to come in and thank you so much for the reversal of your policy that you made the vote on your last meeting. I think it's important to give the library staff as many tools in their toolbox as they can to maintain the order here in the library, and I think it was an important vote, and I wanted to thank you all for doing that. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to make a comment? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item of the agenda, which is the study session on libraries, facilities, master plan. And Teresa, did you want to start with?
Mm-hmm. A couple of things to say before we turn it over to the consultants. I think everybody's introduced themselves. So do you met all the new board members? Because I was going
to... have a chance to shake hands with each one yet.
Dick and Jim, I think you know. Cynthia Matthews, Santa Cruz City Council, Zach Friend, and Bruce McPherson, County Board of Supervisors, Mike Termini from Capitola, and Martha Dexter, new citizen member from the Santa Cruz area. Everyone at the other four, you should hopefully remember. I'll let you introduce your team in just a minute. Just a quick review of kind of how we got to where we're at, and then I'll turn it over. The library's undergone several planning processes in the last few years. When I first got here in 2009, we embarked on a strategic plan for a five-year strategic plan, 3 to 5 year strategic plan. I like to say 5 years so that I don't have to deal with it in 2013, and it's right here. And there was one of the goals, strategic directions in here, had to do with a welcoming place. People of all ages find their branch, physical and virtual, to be a welcoming place, and people of all ages will define the level of service they need and want, and that's probably the most relevant part, but this is kind of going along with our strategic plan. This, doing this plan now and looking at our facilities is very much in tune with that. Then in, was it 2010 to 11, we had a citizens task force made up of staff and board members and members of the community to look at alternate service models for the library, and that resulted in a small task force from the board working out a service model that has been our guide since then. We did restructuring that helped get us on a better economic financial footing, and there was a lot of input from the public and from the community on both those efforts. So we got a lot of community input in the last couple of years. We are currently finishing up the facilities master plan. We are finishing up the technology plan. The technology plan also did some focus groups and surveys, so there's been a lot of good information coming back from the community. So the facilities master plan came about because the task force, they came up with about four different models that went to the board, and every one of those models called for doing a facilities master plan, recognizing that we couldn't plan for our 10 facilities. What were they costing us to maintain? We hadn't been maintaining them, and we knew that there were costs involved and serious problems arising in many of our facilities. So they knew that if the decision was made to have 10 branches, and that if we're going to have those 10 branches, we need to keep them as welcoming places in and open and not falling apart. So facilities master plan was talked about first in that task force. The charge that was given to the consultants it was basically two aspects to it. One, what do we need to just maintain the buildings? We haven't been doing maintenance for many years. How are we going to move forward with this and keep these facilities, these doors open? And then the next part of it was the service model that we were implementing made a few assumptions about efficiencies that we could get if we had our buildings designed a certain way. We went to the new service model without changing the facilities themselves, and some places were not achieving maximum efficiencies from some of the changes that we wanted to implement because of the physical facility and how it's arranged. So they looked at that aspect to it too. Some of the branches they determined we told them look at two or three branches and more in depth because we knew that the problems were more serious. And so they'll talk about how they did that and what they did to get there. They were also given a 10-year planning network framework. They said go for, you know, what's 10 years out, what do we need to do? They were specifically asked not to get community input onto the facilities master plan, not to run focus groups, not to run surveys, because it would cost that much more, and we felt we had a lot of information from the community in the last couple of years, so they purposely did not go out and do that because the board asked them not to. They also were asked, I mean, the service model was the one they were presented, this is what we're going to have, not to make changes to the service model, not to make any changes in terms of, no recommendations from staffing or hours, that was not their perspective. Their perspective was simply the facilities. And they were, big thing they were asked not to do was don't go into financing. Don't come up with the financing options. Back to one of the things they were asked to do was to come up with criteria for phasing or prioritizing. How do we decide which project should go when? And so they were asked to come up with those criteria. And so they did that, but they were asked not to take the next step and look at the financing because, once again, that had a price tag to it that we weren't ready to commit to. So that's kind of how we got to where we are. Hopefully that's a good summary of it. If any of that were there at the beginning want to, if I said anything wrong, and David, did you want to add?
Well,
something?
I just think there's a few things. When we had that a task force that met last year, Nancy and others who were on the board at the time, Jim, we also looked at not only the facilities, we did allocate some money for just ongoing maintenance of some of our existing facilities as well as investment in technology. So this is something that even when things were financially tight, we've been looking at ways where we can try and reinvest in our existing facilities to try to make them more welcoming. So I think this is really a long-term vision. I'm really excited to get this presentation in.
Great. And so
that I'll let David Schnee introduce himself and his team and let them take it from here.
Great. So we'll start. First, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board, for having us here again. My name is David Schnee. I'm the principal in charge of Group 4 Architecture Research and Planning. This is our second project that we're doing with the library. The first was the Scotts Valley Library, which we're the architects for, and that experience helped qualify us for this project. We've been specializing in public architecture for nearly four decades, and we've been very fortunate to have in our portfolio over 250 public library plans or design projects to date. So we are in that we just love the Santa Cruz Library and love working with you in this community. Let my teammates introduce themselves. Very esteemed, each of us are going to share this presentation that we'll be doing.
I'm Jill Ayers. I'm an associate in architect group four.
I'm Jonathan Hartman, also a senior associate in architect group four.
Paul Jamkard, also an architect at group four architecture.
Okay, we work very collaboratively. Each of them has participated extensively in this project. So we have a 35 to 40 minute presentation. That's pretty long as presentations go. That's why Teresa gave you food and nourishment to keep you through it. What we'd like to do is save this whole second hour for your discussion. If there are specific things that any of us state that are just confusing or you didn't get or we spoke too quickly, that may, they speak more slowly, just interrupt us as we go. But otherwise, we're going to save the full discussion for the end. So our agenda today is in five parts. Which we'll talk about what went into this project. Just an executive summary in terms of the state of the library. The three main planning tools, the maintain, the gain, and attain elements of the plan will all come clear. And then the tools for implementation planning and how you move forward next. beginning with the introduction. So pretty much as Teresa described it, the three parts we're dealing with, the first part of this capital maintenance plan, the maintain that was shown on the agenda. The second is the service provision. The buildings are only shells. A good architect isn't about just creating form, but it's form to serve function, it's to serve the wonderful rainbow of activities and uses that go on inside in the libraries today. And how can the buildings best support the functions within them? And then third are the tools. Who participated in the master plan? While we didn't have, how many people in this room have heard us either at a board presentation or at Friends of the Library? I think there are a few hands here. We can just see those hands here. So we luckily had good opportunities to work with each of the communities here, to work both with electeds and staff members to get input. The objective here is that we're at a draft plan here. Today we submitted our first draft plan. You'll see it on the bottom of every slide is a draft here. It seems like perhaps it's very polished. We'd like to give a nice presentation, but nothing's cast in stone yet. This is our first opportunity to share our findings with you. We'd like your input on that. And we did meet with the county. Susan, thank you very much for giving your time and your staff time available to confirm on our methodology and to give input back as we've gone. And that's true for each of your communities and working with the Friends and the library, and we want your input tonight. The objectives are pretty much as Teresa described it. And again, we want to be creating a modern library. What do we mean by modern libraries? And if anyone has done any library discussions with your neighbors or with your constituents, someone's going to say, hasn't the iPad and Kindle made the library obsolete? Or if not yet, isn't it going to? And we have to engage that discussion with the community and say, what is the future of the library? And we always like to start by saying, well, what were the principles the library was founded on? And certainly, these three principles, the importance of reading, equity of access, and the value of lifelong learning. That's what the library was founded on. Are those true today? Do you think those will still be true in another 20 years? So, okay, so in this tipsy-turvy world of changing technology, at least we have this bedrock to ground ourselves on. And when we talk about the modern library, Teresa mentioned, you have your excellent forward-thinking, very progressive strategic plan, connect, inspire, inform, the tagline with the new logo. That is a great core. There are further emerging, evolving roles of the library. And how many of you have heard, like almost every month goes by with another major national study on the libraries, because this question is burning in our minds and the need for investments is so significant. Internet American Life Project recently came out and said people want more and more electronic books. No surprise there. But people were a little surprised that people still want physical books in their library. We're not ready to abandon them entirely here. And how many of you do most of your reading on electronic formats now? And how many of you still read on books too? Okay. That seems that you guys must have all been on the pew example there. So we're still there. And so obviously, what we understand today is not what it's going to be in a few years. And the foundation of any facility plan, operational plan, is flexibility and adaptability. So moving into a sort of executive summary of the state of your libraries, I think you know them well. I think the summaries will be intuitive. It's the data and then the cost in particular that again, are most interesting. But we'll, for those who perhaps only know a few libraries more intimately, we'll help paint the picture for everyone here today. So you have 11 facilities, 10 branches, and one headquarters. Average age is 40 years old, with Felton being the oldest, and I think cutest, and it's, again, Scotts Valley being the newest, although it's a reincarnation. 115,000 square feet system-wide, not a huge amount of square footage, but generally appropriately sized for you. As part of our looking at the community, we had 3 months of circulation data, which were shortly, within 6 months after Scotts Valley opened, I believe. We looked at the circ data, and we'll have the next two slides are about that. And what we find is that there's a pretty good matchup, almost countywide, between the usage and the size of the libraries, with three exceptions. The three exceptions are Aptos, which has 15% of the circ, but only 8% of the square footage. Capitola with 8% of the CERC, but only 4% of the square footage. And surprisingly, Scotts Valley, which we, there was always when we did the project, we had a master plan idea for expanding it back then, is doing 18% of the CERC with 13% of the square footage. So there's a little bit of a disconnect on that measure, amongst others, but the libraries are doing really well. Now, this chart requires just a little bit of walking through, and it's worth it because it's a fun and interesting chart. And so what we have across the bottom are where customers live. And so these are not fully discrete communities, but they, with a library database, they were able to locate that you can live in Capitola, SoCal, Aptos, et cetera. Each color, which is hard to see on the screen, apologize for those who don't, it's a little bit washed out, but each color represents the library people where they live used. So you have Santa Cruz, folks in Santa Cruz. A chunk of them also go to Scotts Valley Library. So Jim, drawing people from the city. And of course, people who live in Santa Cruz in great numbers use the downtown library. But we go out to Aptos, and we see that each of these colors represents a different band. The one that's pointed out here are those people in Aptos who also use the Oak Library. And so we've seen this. We've done community plans across California. We've done in Washington State. We've done in Colorado. We've done in Kansas. Ohio. Communities like this are mobile. Like you know that already, that your residents and neighbors are not just only taking services that are in where they live. And people are using multiple libraries. You can't just sort of look out your door and assume everybody's going to the nearest library. And what we see here, we have other charts that look at the data by the libraries and flipping it, that all libraries are countywide resources. Each one's being used by others. It just helps reinforce the general concept that you all know so well, is that this is a library system, that all these libraries work together in a system. How one benefits will benefit people around the county. And so just is a really well-supported and helpful finding. And so mirroring our three sections of the plan, how are libraries holding up? What's their physical condition? We said they're diverse in age and condition. There is a big backlog of deferred maintenance on your facilities. Like it's, David, it's great that we're saving money. Like when there's no money, you're cutting hours. Saving anything aside is a good statement of principle. But there's your facilities need more. And right now, there's a basically the way facility needs are handled are on an emergency basis when they come. One simple repair blows the whole year's budget, and you have to do it. It's not a sustainable approach. That's the purpose of this. The second part of this was the operational, the service model fit. And pleased to say that Scotts Valley is a great illustration of the new streamlined, customer-oriented, self-sufficient, great interaction with staff, flexible library. That model is not already in place in all the other libraries yet. There's great opportunities to come in, and Jill's going to walk us through that. And then our library is ready for the future. Felton, in his present state, is definitely not, but the proposals for expanding it and creating a modern library as in Aptos and Capitola are great opportunities, and we'll talk about that. So we'll go into our three sections here. Of the plan. You've seen these themes in the agenda. We'll let each of my colleagues present each of them. But just to orient to the three parts of it, primary, as Teresa said, we wanted to know what is the maintenance obligation here. And I'm just going to give it right to you, John. We'll explain each as we go. I think it'll keep things moving.
So as David was beginning to explain, the maintain portion, which we're going to dive into now, really looks at how to maintain the facilities in their existing condition. So this is a place I'm just going to move on to the next slide. Looking at deferred maintenance items and improved energy efficiency. And this is really a core part of the capital maintenance plan. Am I blocking people's views? I can't quite tell where to stand. Sorry about that. it's a great tool for planning and budgeting for life cycle. And it really is looking at anticipated renewal dates. So we have two different methodologies that we use. We went around to all of the different facilities and we physically looked at all of the facilities in person. We also went through all of the existing drawing documentation that existed. We talked to the staff maintenance personnel. We talked to your contract maintenance personnel. We had a structural engineer review a couple of the different facilities for some potential issues. We tried to do a pretty thorough job of looking at things. And when we looked at things, there was two different ways we looked at them. The first one was saying, can I tell right on its face how old this object is? If I look at this water heater, does it have a sticker on it that says it was made in 2006, or it was made in 1996, or heaven forbid, it was made in 1976, which occasionally happens. The fans in this building are original. The fans that push the air through the ducts in this building are original. They've had their bearings replaced twice in the last 10 years, but they, darn it, fans are original, right? And if we can't tell, and so we look at that, we say, okay, we have a water heater. We know that water heaters have about a 10-year life cycle for a standard water heater. We know that it was put in 15 years ago. We probably need to note that down. Or we say, oh, it was only put in 5 years ago. We can project out 5 years into the future and say that the expected renewal date for this water heater is 5 years in the future. What we don't know, for maybe this carpet, for instance, we don't know exactly when this carpet was put in. Unfair. Here, probably not exactly when the carpet was put in, but we go with this analogy. We look at the carpet, and we have a two different scales that we look at. One is a physical condition scale, scale of 1 to 5. It says 5 being the carpet is literally fraying under our feet as we walk, and 1 being pristine, it was just put in the last year. And we say, where is this rank on a scale of 1 to 5? And then we say, okay. We take that and put that in aside and say, on a scale of 1 to 5, how does this carpet's appearance or physicality affect the operations of the library? Is its frame nature actually a tripping hazard? Is this a liability issue? Are the an uneven chair leg, is that a problem? Whatever the situation may be, 5 again being a significant issue affecting operations, and 1 being it's a non-issue. And so we use those two numbers, those two 5 scale numbers, we put them together, and we use them to create a rating system that works similar to if we knew that magic date when it was installed. And based on that, if you really want me to get into the math, we can do that. We can project a date forward or backwards as to when we would expect to have to replace it based on its current state and its effect on operations. So that's kind of the backup plan. And as you can imagine, in this these facilities that you have, we don't have complete information for lots of things, and so we've had to use this sort of visual assessment method in several places. And obviously, if new information comes to light, we can always amend that within the format that we have. And so we've gone through all of the facilities, we've done this analysis, and then we've tried to organize this information into categories, industry standard categories. It's called the UniFormat system. It was created by government employees. It works very well for organizing data. And basically, you look at the shell of the building, the interiors of the building, you look at finishes in the building, you look at category B, which is the mechanical systems and utilities of the building, furniture, fixtures, and equipment, and the list goes on and on. And we try to categorize these things. And as you can see in the pie chart, the finite breakdown is not quite as important, but as you can see in the pie chart here, interior shell takes up a fair amount of the pie, interior takes up a fair amount. This would be the HVAC systems, plumbing systems, things of that nature, and then equipment and furnishings and site work. Our analysis was primarily focused on the building itself and the building interiors. Certainly, site work, you can go in a lot of different directions, where there's things that were related to parking, the ADA parking, things like that. We did take a look at those things. And so, as we put all of this into a tool, into a spreadsheet, and as you can imagine, the spreadsheet is taking all of these water heater dates and carpet dates and is projecting them forward not only with the material cost of the item, also the labor cost that we expect that it would require to replace that item. This is a one-for-one trade. So this is like saying, I'm taking my car into the shop, I need a new transmission, I'm just getting a new transmission. They're not gonna drop in a bigger engine. They're not going to, redo my air conditioning system. They're only going to give me the transmission because that's what I'm specifically going for today. And we project those days forward with the appropriate escalation rate that we would expect for historic escalation, which is approximately 3.3% per year. So what we end up with is, in the beginning, the first year really is looking at the highest priority needs. It's only looking at the top tier things. You know, if we were to say that something was on a visual scale a 5 and a 5, you know, that's going to show up in fiscal year 2014. And then, as you can imagine, as we all kind of know intuitively, there would be a significant amount of deferred maintenance that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed rapidly thereafter. And actually, the data, this is how it played out. And so you can see this large amount of deferred maintenance backlog. And as the deferred maintenance backlog draws down, you begin to move into an area that is closer to what you would expect to see for your annual ongoing, in a perfect world, perfect budget, ongoing facility maintenance type of trend. Obviously, there's deferred maintenance still tied into these areas, but this is not as critical items as we fund up front. One of the tools that you'll find across the industry when you look at facility plans like this is this thing called a facility condition index. This was also created by a member of the federal government. And it's really a ratio expressed as a percentage that attempts to convey the condition of the building. And it attempts to convey it through a very simple formula. It looks at the renewal cost, the replacement cost for a specific item, your car transmission, relative to the replacement value of the building, the replacement value of your car. And so we all do this. We go into the shop and think something's wrong. And they tell us, oh, your $5,000 car needs a $2,500 transmission, and then everybody kind of takes a deep breath and stands back and says, "Well, what am I going to do, right?" And so, the way that we look at this is by saying that if the ratio here of your deferred maintenance or your maintenance backlog to the replacement cost is within 10%, or 0 to 10%, the building's considered to be in generally good condition. If you're between 10 and 20%, the building's considered to be in fair condition. If you're over 20%, it's generally considered to be, I'll just say, not in as good condition as fair. Less than fair. Hopefully, I saw nodding heads, so I'm hoping that makes some sense. And so we begin to apply those formulas here to the different facilities within the system. And when we look at, so this would be the 5-year, we look at a 5-year window, so this would be the aggregated deferred maintenance costs over 5 years. You saw those big green bars on the two slides ago. For Aptos, you're talking about 38%. And if we look at all 10 years, you're looking at 45%. And this assumes that the status quo generally remains, and that no supplemental funding is provided. Okay. And you can see here that some of them, Scotts Valley, is in the green now, but even in 10 years, it's going to start moving into a fair condition, which is not uncommon. You would expect that finishes are going to degrade within that amount of time. The roof on Scouts Valley is not brand new right now, or not brand new even at the time of remodel. There's things that are going to come up over the life of the building. And in general, the system as a whole is in that less than fair category. And so as we presented this to various groups, some of you included, we seem to be getting some themed questions here. So we thought that maybe the right thing to do would be to put them up on the screen. Certainly not trying to shy away from them here. And so I'm not going to read each question individually, but I think this is a good point to transition.
Great. And I think it was suggested amongst our team to actually walk us through some of these FAQ. We'll have them a couple of times. For each section. So $1.7 million a year, rounding up that $1.6 million from the previous slides that John showed. Why is it so high? And the reason is because of the backlog for maintenance. That's what's really driving it to be so high. Just as John described it, well, what should it be in an ideal world? Rule of thumb is that you should be budgeting between 1.5 to 3% of your total facility renewal cost per year on an ongoing basis, assuming you've been doing it make large maintenance investments, and that's really a policy decision. Some people will say it's at that 50% mark when they analogy of the car. One industry benchmark is at 60%, they really will question it. If you have a historic facility, there could be mitigating circumstances, so the project might lend itself for renewal well, and you can do major renewals. So these are a couple of the two of the questions that we're in. So that takes us to our next topic of game, and I'll hand it over to Jeff.
So the capital maintenance plan that John was describing gets us to a place where the buildings are in good physical condition. The bricks work well, and the carpets look nice, and the roofs don't leak, plumbing systems work well. But it doesn't really move us any further toward a library that implements the service model that Teresa was describing. The service model being things like increasing customer self-service opportunities, self-checkout, better access to held materials, having better access to the collection in a more browsable way that people can find things that they want rather than having to ask staff, you know, where's the 49.2? Things like that, improving operational efficiency, consolidating service points, the old model being big desks with a lot of staff behind them where customers approach for transactions like checking things out. Moving toward a model more like Scotts Valley, where people can take care of a lot of their transactional activities themselves, having the staff be more available for customers in the rest of the library for more value-added, personalized service. And then technology. The service model talks a lot about improving technology, technology, modernizing it for on both the customer side and the staff side. Teresa, I don't know if you've talked with the board yet about the technology plan that's going on concurrently with our work, but we did have the opportunity to talk with that consultant a little bit about some of the things that he's going to be recommending, things like improved customer access to power and data, having power at every seat, that sort of thing. So how do we put these things into the library's existing facilities? What are those opportunities, and how can we make that happen? So taking a step back, we did identify opportunities to implement those things at all of the facilities, except it didn't make sense to us to try and look at those things for Felton and Capitola. Both of those libraries, for very different reasons, Felton is an uber-permanent facility, and Capitola was always planned as a temporary facility. But in both cases, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to put all the maintenance into bringing them up to a permanent level and then trying to put the customer service model improvements on top of that. So looking at most of them except the Felton and Capitola, and not headquarters. Headquarters is also not good. So some images to help us all get on the same page about what we're talking about. Marketplace, this is what I was talking about a very browsable, very navigable collection for customers. Power and data access, having power at every seat. People bring their own technology increasingly. They want to stay, they want a place to plug it in, they want Wi-Fi. On the staff side, making the desks more person level, freeing the staff to move about the floor. Automated materials handling is something that was identified in the customer service model as something that's a possibility in the future where circulation might the amount of circulation at a library might warrant it. And then things like the opportunities for greening the facilities. A lot of the projects that John was mentioning as part of the capital maintenance plan, there are opportunities to have those be greener systems, replacing the mechanical system with something that's more energy efficient, something that reduces the environmental footprint. But there's also opportunities to perhaps look at photovoltaic panels on the site or on the roof, things that can make us just a little bit cleaner as well. So we did, won't go through each one of them, but put together some ideas for how the customer service model could be implemented at each of these facilities, except for Felton and Capitola headquarters, put a budget associated with those, and that brings us to the game plan. As I mentioned, the projects that are in blue here are the ones with the game level recommendations. All of those pieces of material are lot of opportunity in, to coordinate, to bundle the projects that make sense to go together. When the carpet and the paint are due, taking that opportunity to maybe look at furniture replacement or things that might logically go with that. So, we talked about solar panels. The budget we don't have a budget for buying solar panels, but there's an opportunity to go through, look at leaseback programs where you can get the panels without so much capital outlay. And then automated materials handling. Why hasn't that been already implemented? They're not cheap. So looking at where it might make sense to put those in. And those are budgeted for in the plan.
And another frequently asked question often when you're looking at these materials, are we suggesting or implying already some sort of phasing for a particular project? And there is no phasing plan in the information you've seen yet. We've endeavored to do it just alphabetical by order. So sorry, Felton, we would have thought F would be so late in the alphabet. So moving on to the third section, which is attain. As we said earlier, and in my introductory remarks, is that libraries are thriving, and Santa Cruz is a thriving community that loves and uses its libraries, and there are great opportunities for making them as best as they can be. Some libraries can't serve adequately. There's opportunities here in this library to improve it, and so we look, while we're at it here, how can we create the infrastructure? Where are there deficits in space where we can go from gaining to attaining, reaching for that higher mark? You have a strong, good infrastructure, good distribution based on your service model. So we're not talking about a plan like San Jose and rebuilding all of your libraries. So there are a few opportunities for that. We're going to, Paul Jankert's going to walk us through that.
So with a number of the different branches, for this whole level, we're basically taking the opportunity to test these different branches for their capacity for programming, for budget, and just for fit to improve their functionality. And a couple of these branches are also, we looked at major renovations to the building and also replacements. So this one, we're just going in alphabetical order, so there's no kind of priority in these, but Aptos branch, as you can see, is constrained somewhat by its architecture, the structure itself. And so in order to try to gain some more space to provide better services for that marketplace functionality and the children's services and public meetings, we came up with a saddlebag configuration that allows us to add a little bit more space to kind of scoop the staff back into this space here, giving a little bit more room for the adult collection and for the meeting rooms, as well as making some improvements to allow for this marketplace in the middle. This maintains it at about 11,000, it moves up to about 11,000 square feet. It does make some improvements, but it does have some significant constraints that remain from the existing structure. Now, if we were to kind of take a step back and say, what could that site actually support? We maintain the amount of parking that we've got there, which is an important component for this facility, but by taking the entire available space for the facility, we can actually provide a space up to 16,000 square feet on two levels. That would have a highly functional first floor that would provide enough space for an ideally suited space. As Jill and David mentioned earlier, this is one of the hardest working branches in the whole system. It's actually delivering much more service on a per square foot basis than any of the others. And so the ability to try to respond to that demand, I think, is an important one to consider. And so as you can see up here, at this ground floor, we have children's back here. We've got a large area for adult spaces. And then a nice entryway, and the staff is well positioned for returns at its operation, and then upstairs, able to work in this sort of multi-mode functionality that we want to try to achieve to be able to operate this separately after typical hours, again, looking for real efficiencies. We have the community meeting room, as we are in right now, and a classroom, and then more staff areas, along with some accompanying restrooms and things like that. So that's the kind of increase in functionality we're trying to achieve in these attain options. I shouldn't say options, but these really are just more studies. Capacity. Now, here we are at Capitola, where we've got modulars there now, so something needs to be done for a long-term kind of vision for this space. And here, I'm presenting two different sort of ranges. One is, again, trying to deliver all of those new services on a single floor, which kind of has us at the lower end of this range of 12,000 square feet. But if we were to, like in the Aptos, take some of those functions and put them up on the second floor, we can spread out a little bit more. It allows us to maintain a great relationship to this existing park and still have perfectly adequate surface parking without having to take on the expensive structured parking. And so this, again, is a great chance to sort of like improve the long-term functionality for this community and branch. Now, studying the different options for the downtown library, I think there's certainly ways that Jill described that we can come in and reorganize the spaces and really make some genuine and impactful improvements. But if we were to kind of go a step or two beyond, I think a lot more potential could be realized. If we, for instance, were to reorganize the space both upstairs and downstairs and introduce sort of the marketplace, provide a much more open kind of place, and more independent operating multi-purpose room downstairs. And then on the second floor to actually cut away some of the staircase, using the second floor slab to allow for a nice high double height space. I think it would significantly improve the amount of light coming into the building, improve independent navigation throughout the building, and really kind of free this up for that more operationally efficient kind of mode. Now, if we were to kind of, again, as we did in Aptos, kind of like take a big step back and say, what is really possible on this site? It's important to maintain the parking levels that we have, but even if doing that, we are able to kind of create a new sort of relationship with a double height kind of pass-through lobby space that creates this semi-autonomous kind of wing that allows for an even larger community room that kind of can support conferences and larger scale meetings, but also a really dynamic and flexible kind of market space down below. And then on the first floor, we've got ample space for all the staff functions, the children's on the upper floor, and then the adult collections all the way down, well oriented towards the sun and access to the south, excuse me, the east and the west. And really just trying to make a more functional interior, but at the same time, we gain some of the spaces on the outside to provide a highly functional public space outside the building. These slides we include these to just try to convey some of the aesthetics, the ideas that are using in some of our own buildings and other buildings that we think are appropriate to consider for all of the different branches. By no means are these proposals for any specific branch, but for instance, this is the double height space that we created in Walnut Creek and some of the public art that goes with it. So again, it's creating a sort of grand space that allows for navigation. I think this is something we had in the back of our mind when we proposed that one concept for the downtown library here. Next slide. Brings us to Felton, which I think is, I think everybody's aware of the status for Felton. It's moving forward, I think very importantly, and this is a perfectly fine solution to the need that's there. And this is Scotts Valley, the project that David mentioned that we've worked on. The attained step for this would be to actually complete the expansion and utilization of the existing structure to expand into this space. And by moving into there and creating a highly functional conference space that could be used for a wide range of uses, it would create, again, that very badly needed sort of function to be able to support conferences and diverse meetings, but it would also free up some spaces inside the library, study spaces that could be transformed into those new elements that are being introduced to the library of the 21st century, such as sort of maker spaces, places for people to do digital production and actually engage and create content. And so, again, it sort of liberates this library, though successful as it's been over its current first year or two, to be even more for that community, just building on its own successes. And so I think that's the last one we've got here, so I'll give it back to David.
Thanks, Paul. And so again, always part of our job is to add up the costs for it. On each of these, going through the attained people are still, we've been in a grand era of library construction over this past decade, and people are still building new libraries across the state and across the nation, so we're able to benchmark costs very well. The gain level that Jill was presenting, many communities who are still holding out and looking for their funds are doing those type of projects, so we're able to budget for those well, too. We've got five branch remodels in Marin County going on now as well. And so this shows the increment between the more modest recommendations, such as the extreme makeovers, the structural remodels, to the higher one being for the larger size a new construction. So we present those as a range for those. This particular, both the gains and the attains, unlike the methodology presented by John on the capital maintenance, these don't have escalation in them yet. And so depending on when you factor in what your implementation timeline might be, that would have to be added to your planning. These would be all code compliant with new construction, would be to a high level of LEED certification, silver minimum, potentially gold as a standard within these budgets. And that is the summary of that. So some frequently asked questions. So what level of design and budgeting has gone into these recommendations? And Paul's got a wonderful hand, and it's very easy to look at these sketches and think we started design. As Paul said, these are just capacity tests, trying to just tease the opportunity there. If you, there would be a tremendous amount of additional input needed if we move forward on these to determine what these designs would be. And why is there such a range of recommendations here? Like, why isn't there one size fits all? Because you have such a diverse range of facilities. Okay, so then moving on to, we're nearing the home stretch here. So implementation planning, really our last chapter of this. So seeing those three cost slides put together, you see all the different increments there. I mentioned communities around the state and around the nation that are doing gain and attain level recommendations. There are fewer who are necessarily looking how to do just the maintain only, just because it's a lot of money and it's hard to do, and so people start doing more of those if they haven't already had those properties funded. And so putting those recommendations by our color-coded method back on the map, it's clear how they all go. I'm sure you've been following that. And as Jill had mentioned earlier, the criteria for phasing the project that we are proposing to consider, of course, is geographic equity. It's very important that we know that your customers are using and going to libraries across the county. You don't want all the improvements to be in just one part of the county. You have to plan your improvements judiciously so that you don't interrupt service in a way that could be disruptive to your customer base. Facility condition, if you're looking at having to put in hundreds of thousands, if not more, in repairs, and how long is it going to be before those repairs are due. The facility capacity, hey, we really need like aptos to increase that. And service model, like, hey, this is some of this low-hanging fruit and you can start doing this earlier, are ways of doing that. Of course, project management capacity, it takes time and staff to do it. And the number one criteria that's going to govern this is the available funds. Like, that's really the pool that's going to come back. Opportunity, Felton has land donated to it. I don't know if there's other opportunities. And then, of course, political, fiscal, and operational perception. So what we've done is done two approaches, illustrations of phasing here. These are by no means firm recommendations. There are many more than two. But the first one says, identifies Felton, getting that project because it's so far along in its design, the site entitlements are there, assuming the funding's in place. You would start that immediately. Also, the projects that have longer durations, like Capitola and downtown, that have longer design phases, you would start those projects right away to have them happen in the second phase. B40 and Live Oak, you can start earlier. Other projects following phase two, and sorry, Jim, but probably have to keep Scotts Valley phase three here. And another approach is, hey, taking the blues, which are your gain plans, your service model upgrades. Those are the smaller ones that you could probably design and implement as a package. Coming in, try to get those going right away. And then start your Capitola Felton projects going as well. So this is two illustrations of how you could approach them. And so to finally, at the conclusion here, the next steps, of course, we've just submitted a draft master plan. We are very much we're going to review your comments and discussion here and continue to work with the library to get feedback. I believe, Teresa, we're ideally hoping to, in the April, the next April board meeting, to have a version of this that you will get in advance that your comments that you'll be able to adopt. And then the hard work of developing the funding strategies and then the fun work of establishing the implementation plan based on that falls after that. And so that is the conclusion of our presentation. And we really appreciate your patience. That was like drinking from a fire hose with the amount of material we gave you. Mr. Chair, how do you want to do questions?
Well, thank you for the presentation. I appreciate you starting out the presentation with describing it as a systematic approach, a system-wide approach to the library. And I think before we have a discussion here amongst our board members, I'd like to know if anyone from the public has any comments on what they've heard or would like to speak to the facilities plan that was just presented before the board starts to address some of the comments. Anyone? Okay, first person, Paul, if you want to start.
Just a question.
Yes, give two and a half minutes if you want.
It's just a question. On the downtown, both the new models and the team, there's parking that I'm just not understanding how that parking fits into an existing piece of property.
So we'll put that maybe afterwards we can go through any questions that we hear. Any other comments or questions?
Just a question.
Greg?
Across, you see lots of libraries. Is anybody integrating commercial retail space in with the library to help offset costs and use funding for operations?
So we'll address that also as part of his responses. Any other comments or questions? Susan?
Yeah. Good evening, members of the board. My name is Susan Moriello. I'm the county administrator, and I hope that all of you have had an opportunity to take a look at the written comments that I submitted. I want to congratulate Group 4. I think they've done an excellent job of getting us started and laying the groundwork for, I think, what will be some substantive work over the course of the next months ahead. I think to the extent that there is conversation about the future of libraries, I think that really is clear that we need to decide what we think the future of the libraries are going to be in Santa Cruz County and how the impacts of the digital age are going to be looking at our and responding at our facilities. If they're going to serve as town centers, who's going to be there? What are they there for? What is it that we're trying to achieve? So clearly we need to set that road and do it with great enthusiasm and great clarity, and those goals have to be clearly set outside in the beginning. In terms of the maintenance plan, I was pleased to see some of the additional material in tonight's presentation. What I'm hearing by looking at the material is that somewhere in the neighborhood of about $1.5 million is needed every year in order to maintain the maintenance plan as well as deal with your deferred maintenance. And my hope would be that you'll be able to come up with a plan that integrates that deferred maintenance into your operational budget rather than looking at it as another capital cost to finance over a long period of time. I also think that the maintenance plan really does need to just double check going out beyond that 10 years to make sure that that $1.5 million is realistic so that there aren't any big surprises out there that we might not have anticipated. But I think that, that's going to be very important and for us to look at what the recommended maintenance structure is going to be. I do think, however, that the life cycles that have been incorporated in document are somewhat optimistic. I mean, we have facilities and equipment that's 30 years old and completely serviceable in the county. I know that there's been recommendations made for some substantial upgrades to the newest building in the facilities, and that is the library branch, not the Scotts Valley branch. But, I think we can use that equipment for a very long period of time and have it be serviceable and bring it to its useful life without replacing it as frequently as would be proposed in the maintenance plan. But again, I realize these are just very, they're intended to be estimates of these things, so hopefully there'll be time for a refinement of all of that. Now, we heard more today about the service model, and again, our county staff is certainly not expert in the service model changes, but I would hope that there might be some items that we could look at. For example, you take Live Oak, for example. You know, are there some modest changes that could be done that would not spend the degree of resources that would be required and still allow us to obtain the efficiencies or most of the efficiencies that are intended by the by the service model revisions without spending so much money on a essentially a brand new branch. Okay, I do think too that we need to be very, very careful about looking at the past as a predictor of the future. I think especially when it comes to the implementation of the library plan, the future is very much going to be different than what the past is. And I think we need to be clear on what those implications are going to be, because I think people are going to be heading for the branches that are most conveniently located. And I think the multiple uses that we've seen in the 3 months worth of data, which I think is too short to balance a plan on, would probably change if you look at it prospectively rather than retrospectively and include a longer period of time. Again, I would hope we could answer questions like, if we expand in one site, do we need to expand in the site that's right next to it? And again, I think if we have those conversations, if we're going to get Capitola, do we really want as many square feet in Aptos, or vice versa? Is there a way we can work on that as a community to make sure that we provide the best array of services to the public? The differences between the sustain and the attain were kind of difficult for me in the beginning. They're a little clearer here today, but if you look at the goal standard, you know, the attain standard that was intended to be achieved, and again, I have a slightly earlier draft that I was working with, so the figures that are in my letter are slightly less than the figures you have here, but we were looking at essentially $76 million worth of improvements. And if you look at that on a per square footage basis, it came to about $563 per square foot, which is probably what you could build the whole new system for. So I think in our desire to estimate these things and to look at them going forward, we're going to need to refine that number a little bit more clearly, because I think those are overstated as they exist today. Again, I know that they are beginning points, and I appreciate that. There's many changes to be had, and I have every confidence that Group 4 is going to give us some good working numbers as this process continues. I would also hope that we would be looking for opportunities for savings, get some creative ideas here from the public, and that would be ideal. And if there's a way that we can reduce our costs in the system, that would be great. So the last point I wanted to make, which is probably the most important, at least from our vantage point, is that we've been talking about this for a long time. This library board has prioritized the Felton Branch for a long time. I think we need to put it up on the list. Similarly, I think, and again, I appreciate your phasing options that you presented today. I hadn't seen those earlier. If we move Aptos up, Felton up, Capitola up, and then allow the rest of the things to kind of move to their appropriate priority, that would be great. I also would caution the amount of money that we are proposing to spend. It's a lot of money. We did a similar study like this to the counties. Let's see if I've got it here. I think I wrote it down. 150 buildings, 1.5 million square feet, and over 2,000 acres of land. We'd be spending a ton of money on a county-wide basis. So I hope that we can be modest in our goals.
All right, thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak regarding the presentation? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for discussions. And just if I recall, when we first had this discussion last time, it was pretty open-ended in terms of the comments people had. So, I think what we'll do is allow, comments. Some board members will have comments on other board members' comments. So it's, I think the discussion is going to move pretty quickly. So if I do ask for a pause, it's just so that we can make sure that each person's comments are accurately recorded on the board, and Group 4 has that information when they move forward.
David, do you want to answer the two questions?
Yeah, I was going to take it back. So the first two questions that you had from the audience members were one, the parking at Felton, and also
downtown.
Downtown. And then also the integration of retail sales at branches to offset costs.
So on the question, the strategies for the game level recommendation for downtown is to preserve existing parking as is, so it's not changing. In our metrics, we do just check to see what the sort of target parking would be, so there might be another number on the sheet that evaluates it, but we're part of a whole downtown parking district here, so we're not looking to change that as part of the game.
Yeah, there was, we kind of tried to optimize, you can make the two currently separated portions of that parking work together,
oh,
so that it works better in a consolidated way for the customers.
Yeah,
opportunity. And then the question you asked about mixed use libraries. Indeed, libraries are often located in downtown areas that have mixed use opportunities. There should be more of them. I can try to come up with more. Vancouver, British Columbia, has a wonderful array of commercial uses surrounding the library, and in Virginia is a large project that will fit nicely here that has a library above a retail below. So there are many of these examples, and the libraries are combining with lots of other civic and commercial uses.
Yep.
And on smaller scales, we've done libraries and malls and there's a variety of places.
And piggybacking on that, can you comment? I know in Santa Clara County, San Jose State University partnered with Santa Clara County in building a library. What about not just retail, but joint uses of facilities? Or can you give some examples that have been successful?
Oh, yeah. So that's a national example of a town gown collaboration with the university and city library that many of you know well. Located with City Hall and Civic Center complex, as we have them just over the hill in Los Gatos. Libraries and community centers are very popular. Libraries and performing arts and theater complexes are also popular. Just they're, rather than standalone destinations, libraries are more and more a place to gather and commercial and civic use to say, hey, how can we minimize trips but also get the great synergies of having people together.
Thank you. All right, I'll take it back here to the Supervisor.
Yeah, Carson. Thank you for your presentation. Appreciate it and for the update that we had too. And I want to just congratulate the library board that was before us, or before me, because we're in a much better position today than we were 2 years ago. And so I want to thank the board in the past for getting us in a much better position today than we would have been if nothing had been done. I just wanted a couple of questions. How does our how do our circulation figures match for 115,000 square feet with other communities? Do we have a lot of circulation comparatively, or is it about norm? I'm just curious about the library operation itself.
Well, 1.5 million in-house.
How do you measure it? Is that the way you measure it?
It's not something we don't normally look at circulation per square foot. I know that as part of the strategic planning process that you guys did a couple of years ago, I think this system is high, circulating high compared to other libraries in the state and the country.
Is the maintenance figure that a million and a half, is that within the operating budget, or are you thinking that that's not within the operating? And should it be? Seems
well with the ample it would be great for it to. I think it's what would it displace if you have no additional funds. So that's
I know. I don't know. I think if we're really thinking long range and it's going to be going on, we're going to need some of those maintenance. I'm not right question here at all. I just to me it seems like if we can build in that to our operations, it's going to be here. It would really reduce maybe the cost of a full bond measure that we might kind of ask.
Right, I think you just are in the tens of thousands, now 50,000 a year, so it's a big step up from the 50,000
right.
to a million.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to get there. This is a concern of mine. It would be preferable, I think, if we can do it. Trying to think of just the nature of the system, too, of what we want to create. Do we want more full-service branches or, so to speak, or fewer? We have a few now, but do we want to spread them out more full service and really have some leaders out in each region of the county, an unincorporated area outside of Watsonville, of course. That's something I'm trying to picture of how we're going to go to. What's the nature of it? Do we want more or less in that situation? I guess that's about it. Those are a few questions that I have.
Can I just ask Bruce a question, clarification? Do you have a concept in mind of what you mean by full service?
Well, I mean, this obviously is full service, and the Gaptos is, Scotts Valley is. How many more of those three do we want to make just a bigger system that maybe could alleviate Capitola will build, and that could alleviate maybe some of what Aptos has to do. Felton will build, can alleviate what the needs are for Scotts Valley. And so I'm just trying to think how many of, not all of them are going to be big, full service, what I'm just, that's a term I'm using.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we're speaking the same language.
We're not going to have 10 of them probably, but we need, what is it we're going to be looking for? We need 4 or 5 or something of that nature.
Okay. Board Member English?
Thank you. First, I just want to acknowledge the incredibly thorough analysis that Susan Moriello and her team have done on this subject. And Susan gave us the benefit tonight of kind of a highlight of what they put together. But I think it's a very valuable analysis of the proposals and considerations around the whole library system. Susan made a number of comments minutes ago, and I'd like to see if there's some way to incorporate those points into the record so that they can be acknowledged and addressed.
Each of us received copies of the letter. I think we can just acknowledge that it's received as part of the record.
Okay.
Because I think he'd be here writing the rest of the matter.
Yeah. I just think it's, you know, it's a...
I'll give Jill a copy of my notes.
Is that, I don't know if that's something available, publicly available, but it was presented to the board.
Yeah. The cost, looking at the cost, the other area, you know, Bruce is starting to get into, well, what's the long-term thinking that we should have about maintenance costs? And you had a rule of thumb number about percent of total capital, and there's this $1.5 million, $1.7 million per year kind of number that's also being talked about. But to get to that level, we've got to get through that first 5-year period where we're talking about $3 million a year kind of numbers in order to pay off this backlog of work that hasn't been done. So I think we need to acknowledge that 1.5, 1.7, whatever it is, it's where we want to be, but we've got to get there first. And second, I think part of, I think Susan's recommendation is that ongoing cost can't be considered a bond kind of a cost. It's a cost of operations, and we need to figure out how to pay for it.
Thank you. Board Member Dexter.
I also want to thank you for a really very thorough report. It's very useful, and as a new board member, it's really helpful to kind of get a feel for the whole system. I have sort of a minor question on the following up on what Bruce said about the circulation data. Was that really the only usage figure that you used for use of the branches? Was there other data that went into calculating the use of the branches? For example, meetings, number of visits per hour of people coming in, use of the computers, other besides just coming in to check out books.
I can just say that our circulation and our visitors track pretty closely with each other. I mean, the numbers, obviously, the scale is different, but they kind of, relative to each other, stay pretty steady throughout. So I think we gave you visitors' data, but I'm not sure that you have it.
Because the buildings are used for more than just coming in and checking out books. And that's one of the, and especially if we're, one of our goals is to increase the meeting spaces and the use of technology and making these neighborhood hubs, it's more than just checking out books.
Right, and so part of, is it okay to?
Absolutely.
Okay, so part of the general strategy was to take to work within your current operational model was sort of the foundation here, which also goes to Supervisor McPherson's question about do you want big or small libraries. That's pretty much the groundwork that was laid by the previous board, and we were working within that. And also compared to many of the communities around the country where we do library facility planning, which look to say, how can we create more of these opportunities for people to come? Like, it's not about just finding a book, but it's a place to sit, a place to collaborate, to be a tutor, to bring a child for a story time, to the knitting circle at Scotts Valley, all the rich uses. So it's about people interactions, what the library's for. And really, you could expand this library, probably double it to 200,000 square feet, and you would have all the
chairs filled all of the time. But we had much more modest directions here, which was to look within your existing infrastructure, what were the opportunities and one of the projects that were and facilities that were really had that FCI that was getting up there here at Aptos and Capitola, the temporary facilities in Felton. Like those were the ones that it just, like, is that putting good money after bad, and should you make the leap to a greater investment? So we were so because of that sort of context, we didn't do a lot of analysis of operations and the rest. There is the question about does one library impact, improving one library impact another? Most certainly. Like if you only improve one branch, that's better than nothing. And as you see, that will improve that. I'd be sad if you stopped there. And then you guys have a really tough job, and I'm going to know who gets the one branch or the two branches. Like that's very, very difficult. So we took a more holistic look at this stage, saying where are your facilities now? Where's your service model upgrade opportunity? Where are the obvious attain level opportunities? And then is there a funding strategy? And if you come up with one that is very limited, then it really will be a lot harder to come back and additional analyses like the ones you're suggesting. Well, how do you choose which one gets it, or how do you do something much more modest? And so at this stage, we wanted to lay the foundation of what do we think is a reasonable and by no means a gilded recommendation. We will kick the tires and make sure the life cycle costs are appropriate, not just in general in the industry, which we're very confident, but sort of appropriate to your expectations as well. So I think there's some tuning you can do there.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Councilmember Matthews.
Very quickly, I want to congratulate you for doing a program that was based on the direction of the service model that was given to you. And I would be loath to reopen that whole issue again. So I think that's the direction you were given, and that's the one that we should proceed on. I think a lot of these questions that are raised about will people go to libraries away from their home, or how much will technology improve, those are just unknowns. We couldn't have predicted 10 years ago where we are now. So I liked on page 2, shoot for the modern library with flexibility and adaptability, and that more than anything is what we should be looking for and building into the extent we can. And simply on the deferred maintenance things, you know, our budget has just been really subsistence for about a decade plus. And my instinct, and we'll study this in a financial modeling, but would be to throw that first decade of deferred maintenance into a capital campaign, get it done, with the expectation that we would be building reserves and building an operational plan that we could sustain it beyond that. But there's just so much in that first 5-year toll bars that I think in order to just do right by the public and say we're just doing a wholesale upgrade, that's best folded into the capital campaign.
Thank you. Supervisor Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks again also for the presentation. I agree with Councilmember Matthews' comment about the capital campaign, but also believe that Supervisor McPherson's point is well taken, that I think it should be codified into this process that the expectation is that these will be built in the operating budget as we do at our other public bodies moving forward. I did have one question that you may have answered, but you know, then again, I forget a lot of things, which has to do with the phasing timing. You list phase 1, 2, and 3, but I didn't really get an understanding of what the distance time-wise is between those phases.
Well, you didn't miss it. I didn't specify. This number of projects of this scale, with all the funds in place, you could probably do as quickly as 6 years.
Between phases or in the all three?
Total.
Okay.
More realistically, because you have the disposition of this building and going through a process of determining do you want to do a major structural remodel of it, or do you want to rebuild it, or is there another location that downtown that would support it? That would probably be an extra year. Knowing how funding draws often happen in sort of the usual kit of funding strategies there, it might be 2.5 years per phase, 3 years, so it'd be 6 to 9 years or so would be something funding and the resources you have to apply to managing the entrance.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Board Member Kerr?
Thank you so much. That was really great, all of the members of the team. You've worked with a lot of library systems, I know, and so I was curious about, you know, one of the things that keeps coming up is this gap that we have in our budget right now for maintenance and what our projected maintenance might be. So have you ever gone back and looked at the library systems that you've already worked with? I mean, did they have as severe a gap as we have? Or I'm just curious that if you ever go back and see how library systems fare going forward after doing sort of some, you know, big project like this, comprehensive one.
Yeah, and so you're in good company in terms of needs. Solano County had gone out for a sales tax measure to help fund their operations and maintenance. The Columbus Metropolitan Library in Ohio, one of our clients, had a combined levy increase that is increasing their operational funds for hours, maintenance, and as they're bonding off that for their capital improvements. Palo Alto is done just bonds for capital. San Jose, just for capital. Oakland did an operations-only measure and came 2% short of the capital measure that followed it. So they got 64.5% votes for a $96 million bond program. And I think you're aware, and Mr. Pearson, you can describe now in the assembly is a measure to lower the threshold for library projects down to 55%. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know.
There's eight measures like that.
Yes.
Okay. And the last one to say whether they'll face it. But people are very resourceful facing because what universally people are loving their libraries and are trying to figure out what's the best strategy in their communities. So
are these systems being able to keep up with the maintenance for their new facilities?
We're
looking at a million and a half, right, incorporating that into a budget going forward someday, possibly.
Well, I think the question was asked by Susan, like, what is an appropriate number looking forward past 10 years, and that $1.5 million was not calculated to answer that figure. And so John had...
So just to clarify, the industry range, you know, which may or may not be appropriate for Santa Cruz, once you work through the deferred maintenance, was 1.5 to 3%. So the 1.5 that's being tossed around is pretty darn close to 3%. We were talking about 1.5%. We're really talking about 800,000. It's still a very, very large number, but it's not that there's a specific number of sites that there's absolutely room to. Continue to look at that, but it's certainly a significantly larger number than the number you're currently budgeting in your operations now.
Yeah. Well, the other point that I think Nancy is making is that once we implement some of the changes from the model, that too will impact maintenance costs for the future, so they will need to be adjusted as well, and they may drop it down.
Absolutely.
Board Member Kurtz, did you have any questions?
No, that's
no questions. Yeah. Any other comments or questions from the board?
Thank you. Supervisor Friend's comment about the phasing. When in that one where you showed like Aptos, for example, in phase two and most of the other needs in phase one, there's no need, if we got all that we needed in one bond, there's no need that all the improvements couldn't move forward in parallel if the board chose to do that, right?
Except for the other criteria such as operational impact, you want to make sure you don't have all your libraries closed for 3 months or 6 months, and such like that. A bit of a revolt.
And the program management part of the convention also.
Right, but again, it's 100,000 square feet, and I think when you, each one of these is precious and does an amazing amount of business there, and they're compared to what the county runs and the city in your own portfolios, you have many capabilities of running a lot and through leveraging those resources, very talented folks in-house here as well, but they can leverage some of the expertise that's used to program.
So real quick, David, to you and your entire team, I thought this was a fantastic report. The amount of data in here, these are, what, 11 by 17 pages, and some of it's fine print that you can barely read. There's just a ton of information in here, but it's so simple, even a Scotts Valley City Council member can understand. So my compliments to you guys.
Okay, bringing it back to Council Member Tremini.
A quick question for our director. In this perfect world where the bond ferry drops $85 million,
yes.
How do you staff it?
We, out of the bond, we would have to pay for somebody to manage the project. We could not do that.
No. I'm talking about everything is in it. We have libraries that are larger. We have libraries of two stories. We've done a lot for $85 million. It seems like it would be a significant impact with our current model to actually make this work.
It's going to depend on the facility. We should have relatively low operational impact. We'd have to look very carefully at Aptos and Capitola. If they go to two stories, what does that mean? I believe they were, I think it's the Aptos one where the second floor isn't really staffed. It's meeting space.
Right.
So
as is Capitola.
And Capitola is, okay.
Even though I have a problem with the amount of staff space in Capitola first floor, that's so far in the future I won't even address it.
So as long as we're not, I mean, and we're at two floors here now, so, and we have to staff two floors. We could reduce one service desk in this building. I mean, we have three, we could go to two. I mean, if you have a second floor that where you have the public all the time, you do need a staff member there.
Right.
But the way they seem to have done it, we shouldn't have to increase staff.
Okay. I think that the roughly $700,000 a year that should be budgeted every year, even after we build everything, should be a budget lesson to us. I echo Susan's comment about, you know, maintenance, there's maintenance and there's maintenance. There's maintenance in the perfect world and there's maintenance in the real world that we all address. And I have questions about the maintenance numbers. I also have a big question about, at the end of the project, at $85 million, let's say we tear everything down and build it all the way up again. And that's not even tearing down Scotts Valley. I'm looking at the full-on sustained gain and attain $85 million project. I think the square footage, the cost per square foot on that is inordinately high for any kind of construction save a hospital. So I have to really question and dig into that a little more deeply on how you made that estimate. Another question I have for you is you mentioned in the beginning that you took into account escalating costs, and yet on one of your slides you cautioned with a footnote that you have to add escalating costs. Now, my question for you is, that highest number, $85 million, is that today's $85 million, or is that in 5 years, $85 million in construction cost?
Okay, so very right to bring reference, and it's good to clarify for everyone, the maintain plan, based on that methodology, has escalation built into it. The gain and attain plans do not.
Okay.
And so then we would have to, as a supervisor, Fran was suggesting, choose a scenario for when this would happen and over how long a period of time. And John, you did run some of those numbers if it were some scenarios,
right,
just to put it in ballpark.
Right. So the reason that maintain was easy to do the escalation for is because based on the replacement methodology, there's a predictive year that you can easily escalate to for each line item. So that's relatively a straightforward exercise. Obviously, for the gain and the attain level, it's the draw or the encumbrance on bond measure would be determined by the phasing, right? And we obviously haven't gotten to the phasing yet. And the more you front load, the less escalation there would be. If we were to assume that we were going to space these in somewhat even succession to minimize operational impacts and try to spread things out a little bit, and then we had we took that bond at 25% in 25% chunks, four draws, relatively evenly spaced over, let's say, an 8-year window, so that we would finish up pretty much at the 10-year mark. So this would be a very conservative approach. you're looking at somewhere between $10 and $15 million in escalation for the game and the team combined.
That's about around $100 million is where I landed at the end of the day, over a 10-year project window. Albeit the smallest part of your pie, but still a significant one, was site work, and yet in the attained plan, I saw no significant improvements to any of the sites.
The attained plan, for the most part, was preserving parking and site access as is. Obviously, for the facilities that are total rebuilds, you would have some utility infrastructure and things that would have to be upgraded for the increased capacity of the facility. And those utility costs were included in the attained dollars per square foot number. Does that make sense?
I got you. And the question for library director once again, I'll start and end with you. How is the second floor of Live Oak working out for us? Do we like that?
It's not a public area. It's a staff area.
Do we still like it? I mean, does it work as a staff area, or do the staff just not utilize it? I'm trying to find out whether I'm constantly balancing the savings in building a two-story structure of X amount of square foot versus a single story, where if we build a two-story, save with building a two-story, and never use it.
The issue in Live Oak is that we changed the staffing completely. So we reduced the staffing significantly, so we're not using the upstairs very much for staff. It does have the staff break room, the staff, the person in charge is up there. I haven't been out there lately, but I think
Amazing worker does office up there, programming, cataloger are sharing with us.
So they are using the second floor. Yeah.
The reason I ask is that there are a couple of your attains that have second floor models, and I've just shrunk away from it after hearing and speaking to library space planners and other directors and just touring other places. Everyone seems to just discount the whole two-floor library, unless you're San Jose and you have a staff of 12 there,
okay, so
and a wonderful staircase.
These are that's excellent observations, and I want to reinforce the principle behind it, which is efficient operations, and your initial question about what are the staff impacts on the attained recommendations. When we design every library today, in addition to service, it's efficient operations. Nobody has budgets to increase staffing for libraries. And part of our approach to this has been to have a staff-neutral physical recommendation to build into staff positive with the game level improvements for operations. The two-story concern is an excellent concern, and there are numerous two-story libraries that don't function efficiently. And Teresa was very reticent to even let us show any two-story schemes. And if the diagrams aren't fully conveying it, our Oakland 81st Avenue Library is almost exactly the model that Aptos and Capitola is showing here, where you have a non-staffed public, you only have the meeting rooms or classroom-type spaces, or a technology lab that can be run by volunteers that's up above. And it's just when you're site-constrained. If by all means, I think each of those projects would be good to look at very carefully at a later stage to say, hey, can we get it on one story? For those square total square feet, it would be much better to have it on a single story, simpler without the stairs and elevators as well. But if you're site-constrained, you can probably get in there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Captain Marie. Real quick to Mike's point about staffing and what you brought up, David, in the Scotts Valley example, as a layperson, I didn't think this was possible and was going to work out when we built the Scotts Valley Library, but we increased the size of the building by 2.5 times. We expected we would have about twice as many visitors. That turned out to be true, but we didn't increase staffing at all because the new library was designed with a zero staff model in mind, like David's talking about, as opposed to the old space that we had. We made do with what we had, and staff couldn't see everything from one central location. So it doesn't seem intuitive, at least it didn't to me, that you can double or triple the size of a facility and not increase staff, but I think we're proving in Scotts Valley that we can.
Yes.
And the Walnut Creek Library, which Paul had shown, that's the one with the two-story lobby and the bookcase in the face of one of the public art, which is a really wonderful exhibit. So that's a 42,000 square foot library, two stories, flexible operation mode, automated materials handling. Staff there use Vocera, which is a necklace communication device that allows the librarians to be roaming the floor, mobile perch desk. That library operates at 56 hours a week at 15 FTEs. So that's where design is helping. It's part of the county system, which is different than the headquarters here arrangement, so it's not one-to-one.
And that's 15 FTEs. That's not 15 on duty at all times.
Correct.
It's about half as many on duty.
And so there are lots of techniques for it. And I'd love to, either through supplemental material or others, go over the cost models. There's a lot to still refine in our work, and I very much welcome everyone, especially to tune into expectations in terms of what's realistic maintenance versus optimistic one. And I think that in particular is very useful to tune to your expectations on the construction cost. We'll go and compare it, but generally our methodology is what we've been using for projects that are constantly being let out to bid and being constructed and onward. So we have a lot of experience in that. So hopefully we can provide some additional information and we'll verify as well.
We're a county of old hippies. We're very resourceful.
Okay. We're going to put that in the cost model too.
What's the next one after the gain of the model?
That's right, the yurt.
The yurt. I have a couple comments about the plan. I've seen a few libraries that have been built just here in Northern California. Many of them are they're much bigger than you'd expect because you think now that we're moving to more digital libraries and a lot of digital content that there would be smaller spaces, but they're being designed much bigger than the previous libraries that existed there before. So I'm wondering, how does that go into the planning? I mean, are we scaling these to the right size based on the flexibility of space that you've looked at, or what any comments on how other branches, whether they've been successful when they've been built, or whether they've been a lot of empty space that's been unused?
I've yet to see, and by all means, what's nice is that we're not on the leading edge of a building boom. We're on well into a decade of dozens and dozens of libraries, and indeed, Mr. Chair, Councilman, these have grown and build it and they will come. These libraries are all seeing significant uptakes in their business. You have to, as Councilman Reed mentioned, like you have to really plan on those and say, we're going to build it just for the public, but we're not expecting more business. It really does impact staff. Staff has to really work in the operational model to know how they're going to handle it, using certain technologies like automated materials handling, which is a getting a book checked in or checked out and shelved and all those tasks really is not what we love about our librarians. And there's a lot of tools that do that so much better. And so, the attained level recommendations are very modest in this community. Every community's got to balance it against what your operational dollars are. Like every neighborhood would love to have a big library in it, and they would probably thrive if you could afford to operate it. And so the question is, you've got your service model, and how do you find the select opportunities, which we think we've identified here, where you have room to expand to help the whole system.
And another question, in areas where you've done these types of projects and you've, communities have invested in the library systems, and I'm sure that's reduced the maintenance costs in the first few years, has it always been at that 3%, even with the modern technology, you've kept the cost for these new improvements, where the cost have been standard at that level, that's industry standard? Like, is it cheaper for us to invest in, without the deferred maintenance, but, investing in new systems to reduce those ongoing maintenance costs up front so we have a lower annual cost to maintain our properties?
I don't think that we here at least have enough information to answer that question fully. I think we've been having some discussions lately as we've been looking. We got some of the maintenance costs for the facilities here over the last 5 years. there's some interesting things happening as the our hypothesis, let's just say that, and it is only that, a hypothesis, that as the building code and energy code requirements continue to increase demand for energy efficiency, and the solutions that are applied are often have greater and greater complexity to them, because we're trying to, if you think about, if you go back to the car again, you say, well, I started out with a V8, and then I figured out how to make a V6 just as good as a V8, and then I figured out how to make a four-cylinder just as good as a V8, but I had to put a turbocharger in it, and now it's got three different computers, and it's got all these other things, but it still performs like the V8 did 30 years ago. Well, my maintenance cost on this turbocharged four-cylinder, oh, maybe it's a little bit more reliable than the V8, but I can no longer repair it in my driveway anymore. I have to take it somewhere else. And so I think the answer is that it's hard to predict how the new technologies are going to affect maintenance costs over time. What you might think about, if you apply the car analogy to buildings, is that increased sophistication of mechanical systems may not decrease maintenance costs over time, and that we should just think in those terms. But I don't think that there's enough hard data out there in the industry yet to push a percentage one way or the other.
Perhaps there's an offset with operating costs, though. If you go into solar power, the cost,
energy costs
way down. Definitely.
Well, absolutely. There's potential for trade-offs in a lot of different ways. I think it's just a little difficult to project increase or decrease in maintenance costs with new facilities.
Okay, thank you. This is one final thought. It was a question that started us off earlier, and that is the combined use, whether it be retail or maybe some type of community use. In your experience, what's been the process that other jurisdictions have used to kind of consider those types of, operational structures to make sure that you do have, facilities incorporating that flexibility if you do want to incorporate retail or other partnerships?
I think both the county and the city, you probably have many examples of that, but when if you have a site through what used to be redevelopment, was the one of the key players, have this general services or public works and economic development. Are looking at partners, and so when it's if you have a resource, which is a site, and then determining what its value can be to someone. Presently, your metro agency is working to study their parcel and is investigating that, and they have a good template for a process of bringing in both designers, engineers, and economists to work there and try to develop and find the partners who might be able to.
Thank you. Any other additional board member comments?
I'm just going to say that one, from what relatively little I know, those projects tend to be big, ambitious, multi-year, signature civic projects. And we're working on a model that's based on an adopted plan that focuses on community branches. And it seems to me, with maybe the exception of that, that's the animal.
Quick point on that. When we were looking at Scotts Valley, we toured several different libraries. I think you, David, and some of your team were there, and I think at least two of the ones that we looked at, there was space where when the library opened 5 or 10 years ago, the Friends operated a coffee shop or something like that to raise money for books, and in both cases, they're not there anymore. It's used for storage. And I don't know if it was a volunteer problem or if there was so much activity that somebody could have made a profit at it, I'm sure they would have been there, but they started off with that idea and it obviously didn't sustain itself.
Coffee shops have been tried in a lot of libraries over the last 20 years, and very mixed success. And sometimes they've rented out to another, like Starbucks in Multnomah in Portland, main library in Portland. I think it was Starbucks that was in there, and they couldn't make it and they pulled out.
I think the only place that I've seen it work is when the Friends take it on as just a volunteer project, because it's not a moneymaker.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I think Santa Cruz needs one more coffee shop.
How about 10 more
coffee shops.
Thank you for that suggestion. Let me write that down.
Yeah, right.
Supervisor McPherson. Seeing no other comments from the board members, Teresa, did you want to offer any final thoughts?
I just want to know, little direction from the board. I think we're still on track at the April 1st meeting, assuming that the comments can get incorporated to bring the plan itself back for adoption. And really, adopting the plan is really just a formality at this point, and then the work has to begin. So what I was hoping is that maybe I could come back at that April meeting with a report asking for direction on some of the following, perhaps. Identifying some short-term projects that might be possible within existing resources, and this will tie in with having the financial planning retreat that we're getting planned here pretty soon. Explore funding for the full scope of the plan, develop a funding plan, developing a phasing plan. I would flesh those out a little bit more, and you know, then you, if that's okay, I would come back with that, and then you would give me direction or take a vote on proceeding with those. Is that
yes.
Unreasonable. If there's something else that occurs to anyone, let me know, and I'll be working on that.
Our timeline is to possibly get something out and done, ready for, I don't know, if it's June or next year or November or something like that. So
we won't make, not this, November 14 would be the earliest that we probably would go, although there are some other options, so we would need to explore that, but we need to get started. So I've, you know, outlined some of the steps, and then at the meeting, you guys can make a...
And thank you for all of your comments, and thank you for the presentation. That was outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good.
Next item on the agenda is the board meeting calendar. Anybody have any conflicts or upcoming dates? No? Well, that brings us then to the next meeting, and I'm reminded Councilmember Tremini suggested that we meet on Monday, April 1st in Hanalei, Kauai. Being that it's April Fool's Day, we'll see you all there. But other than that, if you have the time, we'll be at the Downtown Branch Library on Monday, April 1st, otherwise. Right, thank you. This meeting's adjourned.